welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. In this podcast, we'll be having discussions around the secrets which attract lasting, healthy, fulfilling relationships, creating a healthy mindset, and what women should know and understand about men. Introducing your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, relationship expert, trainer, speaker, and best-selling author of The Cupid's Bow Technique. Lynn's mission is to have a positive impact in reducing divorce, domestic violence, and suicide.
Welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. This is your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts. And today, listeners, I've got returning guest, Stephanie Ann. She's a speaker, author, and attorney. And in a previous episode, we were talking about what is narcissistic abuse. And we're doing a part two this time because we didn't get to the meat of it, basically. And so we're doing the part two of two episodes. So if you haven't listened to the first part, go and listen to that first, because this is a continuation from that conversation. In particular, looking at the cycle within narcissistic abuse. So welcome again, Stephanie.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for having me again.
You're very welcome, and thoroughly enjoyed the last conversation, but we didn't really manage to get through some of the great information that you were sharing because we ran out of time. So we're doing a part two today around the actual specific cycle that is involved around narcissistic abuse. So if we just do a little recap on the first couple of bits you covered in part one, knowing that the listeners need to go back and listen to that first and then continue on with the other parts to it, then we'll get stuck in.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, just to remind the listeners, we were talking about narcissism. Narcissism is like a cake in a whole. We can't take some of those ingredients out and call it healthy narcissism. Narcissism, it is the whole of a cake, makes up a narcissist. It is a disordered personality. The cycle of narcissistic abuse is all about power and control. The first phase is the idolization. Then there's the devaluation with intermittent love bombing. And then there's the final discard. So what we didn't get to is the trauma bond and what this plays in the relationship with a narcissist. So trauma bond, what the heck is a trauma bond? Well, I think most people know what Stockholm syndrome is. When you hear these big sensational cases on TV where, say, someone was kidnapped and now they don't want to press charges, they've actually fallen in love, they want to get married, and they actually have a baby together, you know, that is called Stockholm syndrome.
And in this context, you're talking about the victim falling in love with the kidnapper.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And so similarly, with Stockholm syndrome, that was a trauma bond. A trauma bond in a narcissistic relationship is when you have all this intermittent reinforcement you have with the negative. So we talked about the devaluation stage where they come in and they start criticizing you. The mask has come off. They insult you. They criticize you. They bring you down. The manipulation happens. The gaslighting happens. All this power and control to get you to respond. But then in another moment, they are wonderful. They are love bombing you with attention and with gifts or whatever it is that they are doing. And so when you have the devaluation with intermittent love bombing, it's very confusing. You have these unpredictable rewards and these random acts of kindness and affection followed by unpredictable mean behavior. That creates a trauma bond. And I like to explain a trauma bond as well as like a drug addiction. So when someone first uses a drug, they get this really high dopamine release. All these chemicals, maybe there's some oxytocin in there, throw in some endorphins, and you have this really high. And then they come down and then they use again. But every time they use again, they don't quite get that same high. They But they still get a reward, but then it comes down again. So then they use again. And that's very similar to the intermittent reinforcement with the narcissist. They give you this reward. The reward is their attention and their affection, and then they take it away from you. And so you start craving the rewards. You start craving the good times. And then you start thinking, well, who do I have to become to get that person that I fell in love with in the beginning? Because remember the idolization phase where it was perfect?
Hmm.
And so as a victim of narcissistic abuse, we stay and we stay attached in this trauma bond because we keep hoping for that first person we fell in love with. But if you remember from last episode, that person did not exist. That was a fake person. They were mirroring you. They were mirroring your values. They were mirroring your hobbies. And they became the person they needed to be to have a relationship with you. So that person does not exist. But the victim does not know that that person doesn't exist. And so we crave that first person. Who do I need to become to get that first love back? Maybe if I lost weight, maybe if I if dinner was always made better, maybe if the house was always cleaned up better, like who do I need to become to get that first person back? And this is why when you hear people say, I don't know how to get out of this relationship, I don't know how to leave. If I just keep changing all these things about him, he will love me more. But none of that stuff will ever happen because this whole relationship was built on lies and deceit, and it's fake. And also, you know, if you're a friend, if you're hearing all of this and you're like, oh man, you are explaining my sister's relationship or my friend's relationship, and you can see it and you don't know why they don't leave. They don't leave because it is an addictive cycle that they are in, and it is the trauma bond that keeps them stuck.
So how do you help somebody that is stuck in that situation? Is there a way to help them, or do they have to come to that realization for themselves?
They have to come to the realization themselves. They have to say that they have had enough. It's very similar to, again, let's go back to the drug addiction. If someone you know is an addict, you can take away all the drugs, you can lock them up, you can do all of whatever you think that you're doing until they come to the point where they have had enough and they make a conscious choice to quit. It doesn't matter what you do. Similarly with the trauma bonded person in a relationship with a narcissist, until we have our own awareness and until we decide that we are done and we are sick of it and we can see that it has ruined our life, there's nothing that anyone can do. But as a friend, if you are seeing it happen, don't preach, don't judge, because they will end your friendship right away. Again, think of it as an addiction. They will, what you can do is let them know that you love them, you care for them, you are here for them, you are a safe person, and you are a safe house. And statistically speaking, it takes a person, you know, 7 to 10 times leaving a toxic relationship before they actually leave for good. So they might need a safe house for the weekend because the narcissist is going on a rage and they need to get out. And so be that safe person and understand they might show up to your house 10 times, 10 weekends before they actually are ready to leave.
Did you have that safe person in your life, Stephanie?
I did. You know, once I started telling people, my sister lived a block away from me, and her husband was a OSP sergeant, which, you know, is a law enforcement, kind of high ranking law enforcement. And sometimes in the middle of the night, I would just show up at her house with the kids. And I'm like, Jace is, he's drunk. And again, that doesn't mean that they're abusers if you've been drinking, but he's drunk, he's going psycho. And I can't be around him for the night. And I would show up at her house at midnight and put the kids to bed. And I probably did that probably 7 times before I actually left him. Because again, you know, we internalize a lot of the narcissist behavior because they tell us it is us. They tell us, well, I would not be looking for other women and cheating if you weren't neglecting me. I didn't have a choice because you neglected me. Well, I'm an attorney. I have work to do. I have a house to take care of. I have children. I have all these things that I cannot focus all my attention on you and your needs. But the difference is a healthy relationship. You would sit down and talk about it. Like, I feel like you're neglecting my feelings. You're neglecting me. Can we carve out some time where we can spend more time together? That's a healthy response.
Yes.
Narcissism, if you are with a narcissist, that never happens. They will just shift all the blame on you. Well, you weren't there. You were gone. This lady was available. I have needs. You weren't meeting my needs.
And so what happened in your second relationship that was also in a different way, a narcissistic personality man? Did it take the same amount of time for you to become aware, or was that a lesser time period?
Oh, thank God it was quicker. And so, with him, I was only married to him for 4 years and we were separated for about 2 of those years. So I really like to say it was only 2 years of hell and I learned my lessons much quicker. But, you know, with him, our relationship started in 2019 and the idealization phase lasted for a good 9 months where he was wonderful. My family loved him. He passed the parent test. He passed the sergeant brother-in-law test. You know, remember, these people are very charming. And so my family loved him. And then we got married very quickly. We met, fell in love, got married within the same year. We got married in December 2019. Remember, the world shut down in February, March of 2020.
Yes.
And so it was so confusing because that is when he took his mask off. What a perfect time and opportunity to take the mask off, right? And so I did not know. It was so confusing because I did not know what was truly his behavior and what was just behavior in a response to 2020 and COVID and the world shutting down and all of this stuff. And so talk about cognitive dissonance. It was cognitive dissonance to a whole different level.
Can you explain what cognitive dissonance is for those listeners that don't understand that word?
Yes. So cognitive dissonance is the fog. It is when you have all this intermittent devaluation and love bombing and devaluation and love bombing. It is the gaslighting. It is the manipulation, the coercive control. It is the totality of all the devaluation that creates this fog where you don't know what is real, what is fake. In fact, in 2020, when most people started drinking because we were all home and had nothing else to do, I actually stopped drinking because I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm like, how did this person who was so wonderful, so kind, so gentle, so loving, and so caring turn into a completely different person? He became mean. He became nasty. He became vindictive. He became all these things. And it was like, it's very confusing. And this is when you would hear people say, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personalities. Which personality is going to present itself today? And who do I need to become today to get through the day in a peaceful way? And to become this person that can get the person I fell in love with back. And so that cognitive dissonance is that fog that they create. You know, I always
where you
hear,
don't really know what's real and what's not for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You just, you know, all the gaslighting, all the manipulation, it just makes you question your sanity. And then you feel like you are going crazy. And then they will reinforce that feeling by saying, you are crazy. What are you talking about? That didn't happen. And so I stopped drinking and I got out my journal and I started recording the day's events and things that happened, because he would say that didn't happen that way, Stephanie. And then I would go back to my journal. I'm like, no, that's how it happened. I'm not crazy. They call it the crazy making.
Mm.
And so, and then throw 2020 on there. It's like, ooh, mm. Everything's crazy. So this, and so all of that, you know, creates this trauma bond, like we're talking about, where, like I said, you become addicted to the, just the relationship, because you're waiting for the reward, you're waiting for the good. And we are changing ourselves to try to get that first person back that we fell in love with, which was an illusion, which never existed in the first place.
Hmm.
So can you see how toxic these relationships are?
Hmm. Yeah.
They're so toxic. And so for me, going back to another part of the question was, did you learn your lessons quick enough to get out of this one? But I truly believe we repeat cycles. We repeat patterns until we've learned the lesson.
Mm.
And so, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I do believe in that the universe, God, higher power, source, whatever you want to call it, will give you those repeat lessons until you learn it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, for me, when I left my second husband, and I had lost my eyesight, and I couldn't see, and I was at my sister's house, and just on the bathroom floor, just crying out, like, why me? What did I do wrong? I was a good mother, a good wife. I did everything right by the outside, and yet I keep choosing these unlovable men, and you know, just crying out, like, why me? Why? And it was in that moment that I felt the divine was saying to me, Stephanie, you are not seeing your life through the right lens. You need to let go of this victim story that is keeping you stuck. And you know, when you get out of these relationships, I mean, we are the victim. We were the victim of all of this. But holding on to that victim mindset keeps us stuck.
Mm, yes.
Not going anywhere. And so it's like, you know, I spent over 17 years within two narcissistic, abusive, controlling relationships. And I just wasn't moving forward. And I couldn't see the lessons, because people would say, well, what are the lessons? Well, there are no lessons. And when you are stuck in a victim mindset, there are no lessons, because you did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And so for me, in that moment, I had to make a decision. I needed to shift my perspective from being a victim to being a hero of my story. And when I was able to do that, I could say to myself, okay, what if, let's just pretend here for a minute. What if my two ex-husbands were not monsters trying to destroy my life, but what if they were teachers sent here to teach me powerful lessons? And what would those lessons be? And I had to pretend here, because, you know, I didn't fully believe it. I just had to pretend. So I got out a journal and I said, okay, sure. Husband number one, Josh, if you are in fact not a monster, but you are a teacher here to give me these valuable golden nuggets of wisdom, what did I learn from 14 years with you? Well, the first thing that popped into my head was, okay, thank you, Josh, for teaching me about boundaries. Now, I thought I had boundaries when I was with him, But really, I was the boundaries police for him. Because see, my first husband was the cheater. And so I would confront the other women. You know he's married. You know he has a family. But, you know, we are not supposed to be boundaries police for anyone else. We are only responsible for our boundaries. So I could say, thank you, Josh, for showing me that I am only responsible for my boundaries and I need boundaries. Going into my second marriage, I thought I had boundaries, but instead I brought in a toddler fence. You know what I'm talking about? They are these portable little fences that you can configure into any shape you want.
Yes.
That was my boundary I brought into my second marriage. Very proud that I had a boundary, right? Because my first marriage, I didn't have boundaries. So I was very proud of my boundary. And so I set up my cute little toddler fence, and my second husband, Jace, would push up against my boundary. Well, my boundary would tip over and I would pick it up. Oh, okay. Let me put it over here. This is where it should be, over here. I'd pick it up and move it and put it over there. And then he'd come and push up against it. It would fall over and I'd pick it up and move it somewhere else. That is not a boundary. A boundary is something that is very firm, that is unequivocal, that you do not move. It is concrete into the ground. It is not a toddler fence. So I can say, thank you, Jace, for showing me a toddler fence is not a boundary. I must have a proper, solid boundary. Then I went back to my first husband. Thank you, Josh, for showing me that I am worthy of so much more. I put up with so much for so long because I was so worried about what other people would think. I'm a success in every area of my life, but I'm a failure in relationships. I cannot be a failure in relationships. So I put up and made excuses for his behavior and justified his behavior.
I think a lot of women do that. And I suppose men do too, if they're in an abusive relationship with a narcissistic woman. But I suppose it's from a place of thinking that you're being the bigger person, when actually, like you said, it's not knowing your own value and self-worth and putting up with and making excuses for unacceptable behavior, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And so, you know, I could say, thank you, Josh, for showing me that. And then I could say the same thing for my second husband. You know, I gave him many chances and he just kept using up those chances. And then I would miraculously, well, here's another chance. Because we hold on to this idea that, what if they change? What if I am missing out on something? And like, you know, how do I get that first person back? But again, that first person was an illusion. And so I could say with my second husband is, again, thank you for showing me that I am so worthy of so much more.
I think also we can get into our heads that, you know, we're being the bigger person. So, you know, we need to forgive even something that you know is unforgivable. And actually,
absolutely,
all you're doing is like you said, not having proper firm boundaries in place and giving a consequence, because we do teach people how to treat us, don't we?
We do. And if you continue to let them get away with their behavior, they will continue the same behavior because they know that you're not going to leave them. You're not going to do anything about it. So they will continue to be horrible to you because that's just how they are. They're not going to change.
You know, even if you see that they are working on themselves, let's say, you then start to believe that they are changing, and you then start to fall in love with the idea and romanticize the potential of what they could be in the future, don't we?
You hit it home right there. And I would tell people with my second husband, especially, I fell in love with his potential. We can see their potential. We know what they are capable of doing. And we fall in love with that, like, future potential. Well, you know, after 4 years of being with husband number two, he was still in the same place. We were both still in the same place. We weren't growing and evolving as a couple. We were stagnant and in this horrible cycle. And so that is such a good statement for people to hear, because we do. Sometimes we think that they will change. They're showing us some signs of change, but they're really not. And, you know, this is how you know that it is all fake as well, is because when you do leave them, like, you know, I left my second husband about 7 times, they love bomb you back. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine, I'll go to rehab. I'll do this. And you know what? He did. But it was, he didn't do it for himself. He stopped drinking for 1 month. And then I started finding vodka bottles all over the place, because he was just doing it for show. Because they know how to do things. They just don't want to do it, because it is power and control. Mm. And so, yes, we grasp onto that, like, okay, they're in rehab, they're changing, it, you know. And when I was separated for 2 months in 2020 from my second husband, and again, it was very confusing, because of I wasn't quite sure what was everyone's reaction to 2020 behavior and the world shutting down, and what was his real personality and all this stuff. But his mom kept calling me, "Stephanie, he's changed. He loves you. He misses his family. Please let him come home." And you know that they narcissists will have their people do their bidding for them. Drop the restraining order. Drop the divorce. Please, he misses you so much. He has changed. I see a change in him. And when you do love and care about someone, and again, you have this trauma bond, this addiction, then we take them back. But they don't. For a person to truly change their behavior, which is changing their habits, changing who they are, right? You need to see evidence of that for at least 2 years.
Yeah, I
nobody
agree,
changes
and do it temporarily, and then you start to think, oh, you know, that gives you hope. And like I said previously, you fall in love with the potential of seeing a bit of change. So you think, ah, you know, things are happening and going in the right direction. But then it's soon back to square one, isn't it?
It is. And it's like, no. Just because he signed up for an online rehab, because that's all there was, remember, in 2020 was online everything. No, there was no change at all. And you know, he was wonderful for another month or two, and it was like I got that first person I fell in love with back, that idealization phase. And this is again how we know that they are in control of what they do, because he was wonderful for 2 months, and then he went back to the devaluation phase. And then it was just all chaotic for the next 2 years.
Wow. Well, you've certainly been through it, Stephanie. I admire your resilience, and I admire you for sharing and, you know, coming to your own lessons. And if there's any audience members listening now that recognize that they're in that cycle, it's not about, you know, saying you're wrong and, you know, you should have known better, because we don't know what we don't know until we do we?
Yeah. And you've been in a fog. You have been in a fog. And I get it. We keep thinking if we change these things about this person, that first love will come back. But if something was an illusion and it was fake in the beginning, and like you said, falling in love with potential, there's nothing there. The only thing you can do, and you know, when you truly love someone, you got to let them go. You just have to release them and hope and pray that one day they will become aware. They probably won't, and it's very sad. And so all we can do is just release them and focus on our own healing. And when you can sit down and let go of that victim mindset and actually see the lessons, this is when you can break those patterns of calling these people into your life. I will tell you, after being married to two narcissists, I have done the hard work. I do not want another one in my life. I have
more than enough
learned
over all those
the
years.
right. I have learned the lessons. And you know, here's another important thing too, is like why you need to learn the lessons and know what the lessons are. Because when you know what the lessons are, you know what you need to heal. You know what needs to be released and let go, so you can break the cycle and break those patterns in your life.
I think a lot of it, you know, regardless of what sort of relationships we encounter, whether it's romantic relationships or even friendship or co-worker type relationships, they're all meant to teach us these lessons of self-worth, aren't they, and self-love, and, you know, recognizing within yourself that it's healthy to have strong boundaries. It's healthy to, you know, say no. It's healthy to not accept unacceptable behavior, and for you to then have consequences for that behavior. And quite often we're quite reluctant sometimes to rock the boat, aren't we? Because we think we're being the bigger person, when actually we actually get more respect when we rock the boat by saying no, or I'm not going to accept that behavior.
Absolutely, 100%. Yes.
And, you know, I can recognize in relationships myself where I've not had strong enough boundaries in place, and then realized and been quite surprised, you know, when I have stood up for myself and said, no, I'm not accepting this, and walked away, how much respect then subsequently, they might not have liked it at the time, you know, they actually showed me. And whereas when I've had no boundaries or soft boundaries, that's not happened.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And you know, when you leave the relationship, you must go no contact. And this goes with what you're saying with the respect and the boundaries, because trust me, from my own personal experience, I tried to do it and I just kept getting hoovered back in. And we say hoover because, you know, the old Hoover vacuum cleaner, you turn it on and you take the hose and they will just suck you back in. But if you have the firm boundaries, and if you cut them off on all social media, block them on your phone, if you can. I know some people, we have children with them, and so we have to have some sort of line of communication, and that could be a whole different episode there. But when you go and you have to cut them off, and it is for your own safety, you do not want to be hoovered back, because they will hoover you back with all the love bombings. I changed. Look, I'm in rehab. Look at me. I'm doing this. And if they truly are, and if you truly feel that you should be together, still cut them off and find them 2 years later and see if they've actually changed. Guaranteed yep. They haven't. Guaranteed they haven't. But focus on you, because you are only responsible for you. And you know what? There is a world of freedom. There are healthy relationships out there. There are healthy people out there. And focus on you and your healing and your growth, and create the new life that you want.
Yeah, because when we do that, that's when we do create and attract healthy relationships, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really enjoyed this conversation again. So if anybody is listening that would like to connect with you, what is your best form of contact information?
Yeah, so right now LinkedIn is where I'm at the majority of the time, LinkedIn and Facebook, and I will give you those links.
Excellent. So thank you for sharing that. Any final words of advice before we wrap up the episode?
You are worthy of so much more. And we know how to love, because we spend all our energy and all our time loving the narcissist in our life. So take all that love that you've given to them, give it back to yourself, to love yourself, and find worthiness within yourself.
Absolutely, 100% second that. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Again, been a lovely, fascinating conversation.
Thank you so much for having me on your show again.
My pleasure. So it just leaves me to say, listeners, that true love starts with opening our hearts. And until next time, goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Hearts Entwined podcast. You can follow Lynn via the Facebook group Two Hearts Entwined, or search Lynn Smith, inspirational speaker, at LinkedIn, or email lynn@hearts-entwined.com. That's lyn@hearts-entwined.com. Remember, true love starts with opening our hearts.